We are joined once again by waterslide veteran Joanna Fortune. Here to answer your parenting
issues. That only
issues.
Makes sense if someone's watching.
Yeah, we're not going to explain that. I have a six-year-old girl who is going into senior infant. She's a sweet, funny and kind little girl. However, she suffers from what I think is separation anxiety. She's found the goodbyes at the preschool gate and the school gate impossible over the last few years. It is the same for swimming lessons or gymnastics. I know from speaking with her teachers that once she's in school, she gets on very well and she's very happy in class. Same for any extracurricular activity she attends. As a result, the morning time before school is full of stress. Even though we're very organized, everything is ready the night before and try to be calm and positive about the day ahead. She will try everything and anything to delay, which usually means we run late and chaos ensues. We have read books like The Invisible String, tried reward charts, love hearts on the wrist, etc. But she will take a long time to actually go into school. There will be a million hugs and kisses. And this happened nearly every day of junior infants. That this summer, while she's been off from school, and happened nearly every day of, I've been lucky enough to be off too, none of this behaviour has occurred. She gets ready happily in the morning and there are no issues. She did one summer camp where getting ready, she became very upset again. I'm dreading going back to school as I'm not sure how to deal with her delay tactics and her anxiety. Any help or advice would be appreciated.
I love this. You know, we're in this literally the week before back to school. And honestly, Sean, I hear more from parents who are dreading it than the kids who are dreading it at this stage. This is really relatable. First of all, she's only six. This is only, she's only going into her second year of primary school. I'm gathering this was an issue in preschool too, though. But when this parent is listing out, you know, the goodbyes at the gate and the million hugs and all of those things, but then she's fine when she gets into school, it's literally the point of separation that is the trigger.
Yeah.
Then actually she is co-regulating in school. She is calming down. She is connecting and getting on with her day. Now, a lot of children can do that. And I don't want to say, therefore, they're absolutely fine, because some kids are really good at going, well, I'm in here now, I just have to mask and get on with it. So we still want to know, well, could she be holding some residual anxiety when she's in school, even though she's getting on with it? How is she at that point of reunification as well? I'd be curious about that.
Mm.
So always looking at the point of separation and the point of reunification, and then what happens in between the two. But I'm not immediately reassured when I hear, oh, fine in school, because I've met kids who would really convince people they're fine, but it's a lot of work for them to do so. I mean, this parent has tried
all the things.
But I do think something you could do proactively now and going forward is look for opportunities to practice independence, because it will help build her confidence. And then when she has greater self-confidence, self-belief, she'll cope with being away from her secure base, which is her parent, the parent who wrote into us in this instance. I was also curious if anyone else ever drops her to school and how is she with somebody else dropping
that's
her.
Interesting.
Is it specific to one parent? I would try giving her something of yours to hold on to during the day. Nothing huge, nothing valuable, sentimental. And actually, I think, you know, because we know our sense of smell is such a good trigger for activating memory and reassurance, that actually a piece of your scarf that smells of you is a perfect, or a t-shirt you wear, that's a perfect example of a transitional object that activates that sensory piece as well. You could also contact the school. I always think this is a good idea. I mean, this is a pattern. You know this is going to be an issue. You can anticipate with a degree of certainty. Talk to the school and see, perhaps there's an SNA or a teacher or someone in the school admin team or the principal, whoever does meet and greet at the gate, who could be at the gate and could take her in, just to make that kind of prolonged goodbye a little bit easier for everyone, who could just say, oh, good morning, Sean, come on in, you come on in with me, and just helping her get over that piece when she's had her goodbye. That could help. I also think at home, role playing it out in game. So she's six. So the type of play would be where you're in character. You be her, she be you. So you're going to reverse the role and you're going to play out her. She can correct you where you're being overdramatic, and don't be afraid to be overdramatic. Mm. It's a dramatic stage of play, but she's getting to play it out. But also in that, you're playing out a bit of routine. We do this, we do this. We have three hugs and then you go in, and your limit, one mightn't be enough, but it doesn't need to be a dozen.
Yeah.
You know, so you're just putting a bit of structure on it. But I would look at lots of opportunities to practice independence, and always simple things like ordering for herself in a cafe, going up to the counter and dealing with somebody herself. doing little chores at home for you, things that you can be really specific about praising her actions and look at what you can do for yourself. All of those things will be really helpful at just building her up from the inside out.
Yeah. If she has a, now I suppose it's only senior infants, but if she had a friend from the class and
who
they went in
at the
same time.
Absolutely, that helps.
Yeah.
And I mean, you're going to see a lot of that at school gate starting next week. Like, wait, I'm waiting for my friend. I don't love it being one friend, because if that friend has chicken pox or can't go in, you could be back to square one. But I think naming a couple of kids that she could buddy up with and go in, and particularly if you know those kids' parents and you can say, is there any chance we could meet up and they could go in together? That could be it. I also think when we talk about preparing our kids for separation and looking at separation anxiety, we forget to focus on what might be called be with language. We tell them, I'll be back. I love you, you're going to be fine and I'll be back. But we don't talk about who they're going to be with when we're not there. And actually being really clear, you're going to play with so-and-so, you're going to have this. And if you happen to know who the teacher is, great. I think that's a huge help for kids who struggle going back to school. So you can build a picture in their head. This is what's going to happen. What's the first thing you do in school? Find that out. Make sure you know that. But you can emphasize a narrative around who she will be with when not with you.
Yeah, yeah. I'd really appreciate some help with the behavior of one of our 6.5-year-old twin boys. Every so often, he goes through a phase that's really hard to manage. He's generally more anxious by nature, though sometimes I suspect jealousy of his twin may also play a part. To give you a sense of what we're dealing with, recently we were heading out for lunch at a friend's house. When he and his twin began hitting each other, my husband reacted strongly. He physically removed him from the situation and reprimanded him firmly, a tone I find too harsh, though my husband feels I'm too soft. Our son became very upset, ran upstairs, slammed the door and refused to come out. We tried to both direct and gentle approaches to re-engage him, but he wouldn't budge. Eventually, I went ahead with the other kids and he and my husband followed later. By then, he seemed totally fine. We also have regular battles at bedtime, where he simply refuses to settle and keeps getting out of bed until I lose my patience and shout, which only escalates things further. The contrast is hard. When he's in good form, he's an absolute delight and a joy to be around. But these difficult phases are exhausting for us and unsettling for our other kids. We also have an 8-year-old daughter. I'd really appreciate any advice on how we can better support him and each other through them. I also found discipline especially challenging. We don't have many things to remove as consequences, no tablets or games, and I don't want to use food. TV is the only option. I don't want him to think misbehavior has no consequence. We find ourselves stuck here often, so any suggestion would be really welcome.
Oh, there's loads in this.
Isn't there?
Loads and loads. And I don't, you know, misbehavior has no consequence. I do want to talk a bit about discipline, but I'm not convinced this is misbehavior. And I think something to hold in mind is, you know, go to connection to get correction. If you want to correct behavior, go to the emotional connection. This little guy, first of all, when you say every so often he goes through a phase, it's not a phase, it's a pattern. Because if it's every so often, it's repeating itself.
Yeah.
A phase is time limited and then it's gone. The other thing is, like, the example given is a really good one and it's really helpful to have that, I think, to contextualize. But he and his twin began hitting each other, but this child was physically removed. This child was spoken to in a harsh voice.
Yeah.
Now, look, maybe the other child was too, but that's not mentioned here. And so I was going, why him and not them? You know, when you're the kid in the family who gets the sort of reputation for being the tricky kid. And so you'll never let anyone down. If they're always looking for you to be tricky, you'll be tricky.
Yeah.
And other things can get missed. And there can then be a normalizing of the other children's behavior, that's the norm. And this kid is not in line with that. Therefore, there's something abnormal about his behavior. It could be a bit of that's going on. I'm always aware we get a snippet. Okay. So based on this, I also think when you approached him with both direct and gentle approaches, it can be really confusing for children. This is a 6.5-year-old when you're both coming at it from different angles.
Yeah.
You know, it's very hard for them to know, well, what is it you expect from me? One of you is coming in direct, which I think I read as code for quite strict, and the other is gentle. That's a conflicting message to get for the same behavior. So I think as parents, the best thing you'll do is try, as much as any of us can, to get on the same page, or at least the same chapter, okay, in how you're responding to his behavior, because I think he's getting mixed messages. You're right, never use food. as a consequence or a reward. Like, absolutely not. You're just going to create a whole other set of problems for yourself. But I also think, hold in mind, that discipline should aim to teach behavior that you want to see, not punish behavior you don't want to see. Mm. So be really clear with yourself about misbehavior. You don't want him to think misbehavior has no consequence. As I said, I don't think it's misbehavior. But what do you understand by consequence? Do you want him to feel shamed, to suffer, to feel badly? Because he's not learning from that. Yeah, it's actually reinforcing what I would suspect is underpinning his behavior to begin with, which is, I'm not as well able to cope as my twin or the sibling who's barely 18 months older, you know. So you've got this kind of self-comparison stuff going on, because when you say he simply refuses to settle at bedtime and keeps getting out of bed, do you know, is that refusal or is that a struggle? Because again, those are different things.
Yeah.
Like, refusal implies a kind of defiance. Mm. I just won't do it. A struggle is, I'm not able.
Yeah.
I need you here to help me. I'm not able to do it the way my siblings are doing it. I need something else. And it's a good reminder that, you know, like, they have three children all around the same developmental age, and one of them tends to need a different response than the other two do. Mm. That's the truth of it.
Yeah.
This is about equity versus equality, and you're meeting their individual needs rather than responding to them as this group, this cohort, that it's one size fits all. If you could do some structured one-to-one time with him, it doesn't have to be huge, you know, just small little bits, getting him away and really meeting him at his level, acknowledging when things are hard. I see this is hard for you. I see you're struggling. And then when, in the calm moments, asking him, when stuff like that goes on, what do you think would be most helpful? What could me or your dad or me or your mom do that would be most helpful for you? And it doesn't mean you're going to do exactly what he says, but just hearing his perspective and his thought, well, actually, it really makes it worse when you shout at me. Oh, it really makes it worse when you keep banging on the door for me to come out. I need time. Maybe then you learn, okay, let him go. Let the door slam.
Yeah.
Give that 5-10 minutes and you'll get him out in 10 minutes rather than fighting with him for half an hour, an hour, by just not getting it the way he needs to get it.
Yeah.
So I do think there's a lot here that this little boy is letting you know. I'm not trying to be difficult, but I am trying to let you know that some things are really difficult for me.
Mm. And it does actually, now that you pointed out, it is like, why isn't he like our other children? Yeah. Is the underlying
part
of that. And I
get that because these kids are all the same developmental age. So you've got this kind of ongoing living comparative sample where you can go, well, he has a literal twin and a sibling who's still only, you know, 18 months, 2 years older than them.
Yeah.
So yeah, he does stand out, but it doesn't mean there's anything wrong.
Yeah, yeah. Somebody's texting it to say, ha, I was this Fall Guy twin 54 years ago. Help. I think it's too late now for you.
It's never too late, Sean. It's never too late.
Never too late. Yeah. Just, you know, Google Joanna Fortune. She's so cute. My little boy is 5. He started waking up at night terrified of monsters and ghosts. He was a fantastic sleeper up until recently, but now he's awake for 2 hours, up to 2 hours, petrified. I've stayed with him, talked to him, explained his bed is safe, the house is safe, these things are not real, etc. It doesn't seem to help. Now, we even have to wait until he falls asleep, which is all new. I would be grateful for any help. I just don't understand the change. Obviously, I'm desperate for us all to get some proper sleep again.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the need for sleep is going to underpin everything, isn't it? You'll do anything to get that sleep. This age, though, we have to, like, this is an age where they are so rich in imagination. Like, it's what we want. It's what we want from them at this age. You know, that kind of developmental play that they do where they're creating scenarios and stories and little worlds out of their toys on the floor. It's all fueled by a rich imagination. But it's also an age where that blurry line between what's imagination and what's real is very fine.
Mm.
And so if, you know, it's a bit like, I'm reading Harry Potter at the moment at home with my own child, and Dumbledore has this line where he says, of course it's happening in your head, but why on earth would that mean it's not real?
Yeah.
And it's a bit like that for children, you know, that if I can imagine it, it's real. And even if my logic brain is nodding at you going, yeah, I know there isn't an actual monster, but my brain is painting a picture and my body is giving me the fear responses as though that was real, then actually how they're experiencing it is real.
Mm.
And as adults, we do what we do. We come in with our logic, don't we? We come in, there's no such thing. This isn't happening. There's no monsters here. Look, we look, no evidence. Off you go to bed. You're fine. And we don't speak to the fear that the body is holding. And I think I was just listening to your previous speaker, actually, your guest on the body giving us cues. It's so like that in mental health as well. Like the body lets us know, oh, you should feel an uh-oh feeling about this long before we've interwoven that with a story to go, well, what is it I'm scared of? We know we're scared before we know what we're scared of.
It is like if an adult goes into the bathroom and they see a big hairy spider. Absolutely. If somebody else comes and says, well, that spider's not going to do any harm, that doesn't start make you feeling ick about the big hairy spider.
And that ick feeling will linger long after the spider has been carried outside and nothing else has happened to it. Just carry it outside.
Sent to a spider farm. Absolutely. That's where they usually go. Yeah.
But long after that's happened and you know the bathroom is now clear, your heart rate is increased, you're sweating, you're hypervigilant, that lingers. So I think, you know, and I'm this parent, you're staying with him, you're talking to him, you're explaining, I'm hearing words, 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 and I'm hearing in this state of activation, your little guy has flipped his lid, which means the part of his brain that he uses to process your words is not available to him.
Yeah.
And actually it's the emotional center of his brain that is firing all of those fight, flight, freeze cues at him. Mm. That's what's in charge. So you need to do this. I would increase imaginative play at home. He's probably doing a lot of it, but increase in play with him. Be led by him, but play with him because it's going to get him working through a lot of that imagination stuff during the day and not carrying it into bed with him at night. And then if and when he does get upset like this, try to do more body-led responses. So you're going to say to him, do you know what? You're going to lie in your bed and I'm going to do a little weather report on your back and you drum with your fingers for rain and use the edge of your hands to chop for thunder and as if you're kneading dough, make clouds and blow on the back of his neck for wind and big sun circles with your hand. Or you can make a pizza on his back, roll out the dough, put on the toppings. You know, it's basically a back massage, but in language that works for children. And what you're doing is you're using skin-to-skin touch. You're right there, close physical proximity. You're going to notice that interoceptive piece, his breathing slowing down. And that's how you know he's calming enough to go to sleep, not you telling him there's nothing to be afraid of.
So
doing something like that is really helpful. I'm a big fan of the magic sleep spray as well, getting one of those holiday little bottles you put lotions and potions in, putting water, couple of drops of lavender and a nice official looking sticker label. And you spray that around and that is the best thing I've ever found to get rid of monsters is the magic sleep spray. So if you have a bottle of magic sleep spray at home, use that.
Yeah. Now, they do say he started waking up at night. So maybe is he having bad dreams?
It could be dreams. I did think of that. And I'm also thinking because it's quite recent, because he was a fantastic sleeper up to recently and he's five, I'm wondering about a bit of school anticipation as well.
Yeah.
You know, he's either going into junior infants or making the transition into senior infants. But I'm just wondering, is there a little bit of anticipatory arousal in that as well? Because something like that, even if he's not scared of going back to school, and hopefully he's not, but even if he's not, you can be scared, excited. You can be skited about it. Yeah. And that's still a surge in anticipation. And that could be enough to unsettle sleep for small children.
We've had a great summer as a family with my brother and his daughter over an extended trip from Australia. They've been here for 6 weeks. It's been lovely to see my daughter, my sister's daughter and my brother's daughter all hanging around together for so much of the summer. They're all between the ages of 10 and 13, so naturally they'll have arguments and strops. That's to be expected. But I've noticed a tendency in my own daughter while they've been here. She tends to be extremely sensitive about not being the centre of attention. If the other two are playing together or chatting, she all seems to be butting in. And if she doesn't get what she wants, she storms off upstairs in a huff. Seeing this firsthand has brought to mind occasions when she came home from school or from parties or play dates in a mood. And I wonder if she always behaves like this. I don't remember being like this when I was her age. And it strikes me as quite destructive behaviour that will only harm her in the long run. Is this normal? How do I get her to appreciate that I can't always be about her?
I mean, it might be normal for her.
Yeah, might be.
You know, because I suppose I read this and, you know, how do I get her to appreciate that it can't always be about her? My immediate thought was, is it often about her? You know, how is it at home? Is she the center of things at home that can create an expectation that she should be in other small group dynamics, be that play dates or parties, school, and with the cousins. I also thought, you know, there was a big piece of this. They're all between 10 and 13. I think that's quite a big age gap developmentally.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's, you know, a 13-year-old is at a very different developmental stage than a 10-year-old is. Even though it's only the 3 years, it means a lot at that particular stage. So I also was thinking an Australian cousin comes home. They're kind of a family celebrity, aren't they?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
everybody's so delighted to see them because they don't see them that often. So that cousin is probably getting tons of attention.
Sure.
And the ones who are there all the time, that is hard. You know, so just to acknowledge, you know, a little bit of context for this, that is hard. But given that it's maybe happening around school parties or play dates, because she could be coming home moody because she's tired. But, you know, that's something else. That might say it's more of a pattern with this. So I was wondering how she might be at sustaining friendships in general. Like, does she get re-invited to play dates?
Yeah.
And does she have friends? I mean, what is she? She's, but she, you see, we don't know, is she the 10-year-old or the 13-year-old or the one in the middle?
Yeah.
So if she is of the younger age of this, like if you have a 13-year-old and a 12-year-old, they're going to migrate to each other and have more to chat about than the 10-year-old who'll have to fight to be included in that
there.
Dynamic. Yeah. So some of this to me made sense in terms of, yes, I could see a child of a different age or stage of development having to scrap a bit to insert themselves to butt in, as it's put here. I do think it's useful to reflect on, though, is this more of a pattern with her? I do think it sounds like confidence and self-esteem, because if she was more confident in herself, she'd go, eh, they're doing their own thing, I'll go do my thing.
Yeah.
The fact that she keeps trying to butt in says something else. And it may be that you look at home. Does she get a lot of center stage time, a lot of airtime at home? I'm not saying take all that away from her. Just be mindful around, okay, that's really interesting. I'm now going to talk to whoever else is at home. Like, she might have siblings, she might not, you know, but I'm going to talk to whoever else is at home. I'll be back to you in a minute. And that she just learns she has to take her turn. And on that, I would bring in some play around turn taking. Board games are great for that. Things that have the winning, losing, games that have a little bit of putting yourself out there in performance. There's a number of games like that. There's one called Cranium. I think you can get a version of it for kids as well, where it's performance based. There's one called, is it You're a Star or What a Star? It's something like that. It's an orchard game. And the whole thing is you do little performance pieces and someone is the star at the end. But the reason I'm highlighting those is you have to take small, safe risks. You have to put yourself out there. You have to try something new. And it's not just rolling a dice.
Yeah,
there's more of you in it. And I think some games like that could be really helpful.
Yeah. Joanna, thanks a million.
Thanks,
as ever, Joanna Fortune there. You are listening to The Moncrief Show on News Talk.